Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. As we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us. Tonight, on this incendiary episode of Light 'Em Up, ripped straight from the headlines, we examine the subway choking death of Jordan Neely, a 30-year-old unhoused man who, after the tragic death of his mother, suffered and struggled extensively with mental illness. Jordan's death came at the hands of Daniel Penny, a 24-year-old white subway rider from Queens, New York, described as a former decorated U.S. Marine. This deadly incident took place on an F train traveling northbound in the capital of the world, New York City, on May 1st. The choking death of Jordan Neely has prompted an intense nationwide debate centered on a multitude of issues, which include, but are not limited to, the role race played in this case, if any. Many people have considerable doubt and question the fact that if the roles were reversed, if a black man choked to death a white man, there would be hell to pay. That Mr. Penny was granted bail and released. Also regarding the charge, is it correct or should this incident merit a more serious charge such as murder? On this explosive episode, we'll briefly explore if there was a duty to intervene, and if there was, what is that specific duty under New York law? We'll examine the applicable law, specifically NY Penal Law Section 125.15, manslaughter in the second degree, and we'll focus on our relationship towards our fellow man, especially those who are most in need and perhaps spiraling downward in a mental health crisis. So often we give lip service as to how mental health matters, yet we do so little to help those in need. And we'll drill down on how a reasonable person is expected to act under New York law. All this, pero mucho, mucho más aquí y solamente aquí con esta entrega fabulosa de Light 'Em Up, now broadcasting in over 100 countries worldwide. On Monday, May 1st, 2023, at approximately 14:30 hours, or 2:30 p.m. EDT, New York's finest of the NYPD were summoned to the Broadway Avenue and Lafayette Street subway station, which borders Soho, or south of Houston Street. For those who are unfamiliar with New York, in Texas, it's pronounced Houston. In New York, it's pronounced Houston. Let's jump back to the fact pattern. When officers arrived, they reported that they encountered a 30-year-old black man, now known to be Jordan Neely, unconscious on the floor of the train. Jordan Neely was taken to Lenox Health Hospital in Greenwich Village, a 24-hour emergency medical care facility where he was pronounced dead. Riders on the train, who immediately became eye and ear witnesses, had stated that Mr. Neely had been highly agitated and acting in a hostile, threatening, and erratic manner towards other passengers on the train after Jordan Neely entered the F train at the 2nd Avenue stop. Other passengers observed Mr. Neely making threats and scaring passengers. The defendant approached Mr. Neely from behind and placed him in the chokehold, taking him down to the ground, the prosecutor told the court. When the train arrived at the next stop, Broadway Lafayette, the defendant continued to hold Mr. Neely in the chokehold for several minutes. Two other men helped Penny restrain Neely's arms, according to Assistant District Attorney Joshua Steinglass, who is the prosecutor in this case. At some point, Mr. Neely stopped moving. The defendant continued to hold Mr. Neely for a period and then released him. Steinglass said. Penny's lawyer, Thomas Kniff, who you'll hear from later in a small portion of the sound we have directly related to this case from Chris Cuomo and News Nation, described his client as fully cooperative with the investigation and hailed him as a pillar of the community with deep ties in the New York area. According to the attorney, Thomas Kniff, Penny enlisted in the military as a teenager and was honorably discharged from the Marine Corps after 4 years of service, during which time he earned multiple commendations, including a Marine Corps Good Conduct Medal, Humanitarian Service Medal, a Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, and a National Defense Ribbon. Kniff, Penny's attorney, said Penny at the time of this tragic incident was a full-time college student working towards his bachelor's degree in architecture. As the fact pattern bears out, Neely was approached by Daniel Penny, the man who, in fact, whether he intended to kill him or not, was the man who put Neely in a deadly chokehold, which, as a proximate cause thereof, brought about Neely's death. Let's take a moment to listen to the sound we gathered as extra source material focused on this case from Chris Cuomo of News Nation as he interviews Daniel Penny's lawyer, Thomas Kniff.
Penny says, self-defense. Had to protect myself. Had to protect passengers by restraining the man, didn't mean to kill him. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg doesn't buy it. Charged him with second-degree manslaughter. I said murder. I misspoke. It is manslaughter, and it's a big difference. Why? Murder requires, no matter the degree, an intent to kill. Manslaughter does not. Manslaughter can require, certainly in the second degree, reckless conduct, which means what? Conduct that is risky to the point that you should have known it could have committed serious damage to someone or killed them. Is that the case here? If convicted, he would face a maximum of 15 years in prison. But there's a question as to whether or not a grand jury will even indict. His defense attorney is Thomas Kniff, and he joins me right now. Counselor, thank you for taking the opportunity.
Thanks for bringing me on, Chris. I appreciate it.
There are two things I want to do. I want to vet the analysis of right and wrong here. I also want to vet who this kid is. And let's start with that. 24-year-old, he's always called a Marine. And I respect the service. But I take a little caution with it because it seems like that is being used to paint him as something. Like he's a trained killer because he's a Marine. How would you describe your client to us in terms of how he came to this situation?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously, as a veteran myself, I respect anyone's service. I respect my client's service. But, you know, the reality is that whether he was a former Marine or not, he's an individual who was put in a incredibly difficult situation, the type of situation that really anybody who lives in New York City, certainly anyone who rides the subway, can relate to, because we've all seen situations like this. They become increasingly common in the last few years, as when you point out, you know, our sense of law and order seems to have just eroded. And you know, he's someone who was confronted with a situation and did what was reasonable to protect himself and protect others. So, you know, he doesn't have to be a hero in order to enjoy the presumption of innocence. He doesn't have to be a hero, you know, in order to get due process of law. The right of self-defense is a product of our English common law. It's older than our legal system itself.
Right. All right, so the first line of analysis is he did what he was trained in the Marines to do, which is choke somebody to death. And that's what he used here, and he should have known that that's what it was going to do because that's what he was trained to do. Fair?
No, it's absolutely not fair. He wasn't choking anyone. What he was doing was he was restraining someone. He was restraining someone who was acting erratically, restraining someone who was menacing other individuals on the train, and threatening other individuals with threats that could be interpreted as not just threats to do violence, but threats to take life. You know, whether
let's unpack
Jordan
that,
Neely subjectively
counselors.
Intended them that way. Sure.
Let's unpack that. There are two elements. One, how do you know that he needed to act the way he did? How do you know that Neely was threatening anybody in a way that made this reasonable?
Yeah, Chris, what I can say is, you know, first of all, the media reports on this point have been essentially uncontroverted, that that Mr. Neely entered the train and, among other things, said that, you know, if you don't acquiesce to my demands, I'm ready to go to jail for the rest of my life. Those who practice law in New York, those who live in New York, know that there really is only one way to incur a life sentence in this state, and that's to take another life. Now, I'm not saying that that's what George Neely intended. I'm not saying that he subjectively, you know, believed those things when he said it, but the issue is not that. The issue is how that would be perceived for a reasonable person in an environment where there is no off-ramp. You know, the opportunity for de-escalation, the opportunity for avoidance that we've all have practiced at times in our lives if we lived in New York City, because there's not one of us who hasn't been, you know, harassed or accosted, at least verbally, by an emotionally disturbed person on the street. You know, you put your head down, you avoid eye contact, and you walk the other way. That's simply not a practical option in a confined subterranean container, which is what a New York City subway car is.
Hey, thank you for watching. Please go to NewsNationNow.com, NewsNationNow.com, and you can find News Nation on your television provider. And don't forget to click the red subscribe button down below. Then you will get more of News Nation's fact-driven coverage.
On May 12th, just after 8 a.m., Penny and his attorney, Thomas Kniff, arrived at the 5th Precinct in Lower Manhattan to surrender at the request of the New York County District Attorney's Office. Penny appeared somber and chose to remain silent, not speaking, to reporters. Penny, 24, appeared in Manhattan Criminal Court before Judge Kevin McGrath, where he was formally charged. Judge McGrath set bail at $100,000, which the Queens man soon posted. A give-send-go account has raised over $3 million in only 2 weeks' time for Penny's legal defense. It took the office of Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg 10 days after the fact to reach a charging decision. Penny was also ordered to surrender his passport within 48 hours and barred from leaving the state without judicial approval. He's waived his right to an extradition hearing should he leave New York without permission, and authorities would have to bring him back. In a statement released after Penny's arraignment, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said that after evaluating the available facts and evidence, his office determined that there was probable cause to arrest and bring charges against the ex-Marine. Alvin Bragg went on to say that Jordan Neely should be still alive today, and my thoughts continue to be with his family and loved ones as they mourn his loss during this extremely painful time. Penny is due back in court for another hearing on July 17th. Right now, we provide you with an audio clip of a press conference that we attended from the office of the New York public advocate, Jumani Williams.
Peace and blessings, everybody. Love and light to you all. Thank you for coming out. It's been a week since the world saw Jordan Neely killed. It's been over a week since it happened. It's been a week since it was ruled a homicide. And yet a week later, there has been no charges. There has been no charges a week later. I thank everyone who has spoken out with compassion or outrage or both on Jordan's behalf. We all saw it. We all know what we saw, and yet there are still people who deny it. I have questions about the precinct that let the killer out with no charges at all.
That's right.
I want to be clear. I agree that there has to be an investigation. I agree that I don't know what happened before the video. I don't know what was in Daniel Penny's mind. But what we all saw was someone put someone else in a chokehold for 6, 10, or 15 minutes, depending on what someone says, until they die. That is what happened. And for that person to walk out of a precinct without simple as a DA ticket, a DAT ticket, some kind of charges, makes absolutely no sense at all. a few months ago. There was a video of Jose Alba in a bodega who killed someone and said it was self-defense. All we had was a video. That's it. But people stepped out. They didn't say we need an investigation. They didn't say we should wait and see. Right. Immediately decided that Mr. Alba was innocent because of the fact that he was self-defense. Why would some of those same people now say we have to wait for an investigation? We do need an investigation. That investigation has to start with charges.
Right.
Period. There are folks who deny that there was a wrong perpetrator, who deny the humanity of Jordan, and by extension, others who face the same challenges as him, as homelessness and people who are dealing with homelessness and mental health crisis. Jordan Neely was unjustly killed, and charges must be immediately brought against the person who killed him. To say anything else is an equivocation that will only further a narrative that devalues the life of a black homeless man with mental health challenges and encourages an attitude of dehumanization of New Yorkers in greatest need. Charges doesn't mean there's no investigation and that Mr. Penny doesn't have his day in court. It just says we saw what we saw and someone should at least minimally be charged for it. The protesters that were recently arrested, they didn't say let's wait and see. They didn't say let's have an investigation to make sure it's the right folks. They were immediately charged with something. I think the same should happen when someone is killed. I believe we are now doing to Jordan what we did to him while he was living. We are dehumanizing him.
That's right.
We are not providing what he needs in death, even as we did in life. And if there's one thing we can do in the memory of Jordan Neely, in the memory of Michelle Goh, in the memory of all of the people who are paying because we have not built the structure needed for mental health,
that's right,
is take this opportunity to make sure we don't add anyone's name to the list. An environment has long been created by media and elected officials that encourages fear of violence against people who are struggling, that paints them as a threat to public safety. But being a homeless person is not a capital crime. Struggling with mental illness and mental health is not a capital crime. I haven't heard anything talked about with Jordan Neely that is a capital crime that is punishable by death. Being black is not a capital crime. Justice must be done in this case, and more broadly, we must approach the city's homeless and mental health crisis with an approach that centers compassion and support, treating people as people, not just as problems. Otherwise, trauma will compound trauma, fear will compound fear, and violence will compound senseless, heart-wrenching violence. And for some, it seems violence against New Yorkers in deepest need gets a different response that should not be. The New York Post, of all people, had a headline that said the city had failed Jordan long before his death. I have to agree, surprisingly, with the New York Post. But they have also been a huge part of the problem of otherizing people in need and stoking fears rather than solution. So if they want to do something, start by stop stoking fears. Stop otherizing people, creating an environment where this can happen. We with the City Council recently passed the Homeless Bill of Rights to try and lift up and protect the needs of unhoused individuals. We did not include you have the right not to be choked to death on the train because we didn't think we had to. Maybe we should revisit. We did put out some recommendations and the city, and I want to say mental health and homelessness was among the first things my office tackled when we became public advocate 3 years ago. And in some regards, like subway sweeps, we've not only not gone forward, but we've moved backwards. Some of our recommendations included expand the hours of operation for mobile crisis teams and implement a shorter direct line number for New Yorkers who need to call. Create and implement a non-police number for individuals in crisis that does not involve law enforcement. Administer standardized mental health screenings annually for people who are in school, in our public school system. Train all NYPD officers who interact with the public in crisis management intervention training. Fill, fund, and build supportive housing so that unhoused individuals have a pathway towards permanent housing while maintaining access to wraparound services. We also call to push for respite centers to be expanded, mental health urgent care centers, and drop-in centers to expand. Helping homeless individuals doesn't mean hiding them. Not seeing the problem doesn't mean that the problem is solved.
That's right.
Helping people in mental distress doesn't mean silencing or ignoring them. If we treat people as threats, we encourage fear and violence instead of support. These recommendations have been out for years. We put out another report saying that we're not moving fast enough on these reports. We just finished a state budget. The governor and others spent more political capital dealing with bail reform. By the way, she said she was responding to articles like those in the New York Post, not facts. What if we had spent that political capital to build out the infrastructure of mental health and housing that is needed? But we didn't. My hope is that we can do some of that at least in this city budget as we close it out in June.
Hey, let's tap the clutch and take a look at what is self-defense in New York. I think it's important to note that Daniel Penny made initial contact with Jordan Neely, not the other way around. It's pretty difficult to claim self-defense if you're the aggressor. Generally, the self-defense concept is a legal doctrine that respects that people have the right to protect themselves from harm by using force. This right extends to the protection of other people and, in some circumstances, property. In New York, self-defense is also known as justification. Article 35 of the New York Penal Law Code explains when individuals are justified to use physical or deadly force to defend themselves or others. New York Penal Law 35.15 states that you can use physical force when and to the extent you reasonably believe such to be necessary to defend yourself or another individual from what you believe to be the use or imminent use of unlawful physical force by another individual. However, a person may only use deadly physical force in limited circumstances. For instance, if an individual reasonably believes that another person is committing or trying to commit a kidnapping, forcible criminal sexual act, forcible rape, or robbery, they may use deadly physical force. Here are a few additional concepts to the self-defense statute that are important to keep in mind as we go forward. You can't claim self-defense if you started a fight, unless you withdrew from the fight and communicated your withdrawal to the other person, only for them to remain persistent in the attack by use or threatened imminent use of illegal physical force. You can't claim self-defense if you provoked the other person with the intent to cause physical injury to another person. Hey, by now, we've all viewed the agonizingly gruesome 4-minute video far too many times. Just as we did regarding the video taken of George Floyd's life being snuffed out of him right in front of our very own eyes and for the world to see. Initially, Daniel Penny was placed in custody and questioned before he ultimately was released. At that time, the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner for the City of New York had not ruled on the MOD or manner of death. From a relevant episode which aired on April 13th, 2021, Season 2, Episode 6, with our special guest Amy Schaefer, Forensic Investigator Supervisor with the Summit County Medical Examiner's Office, that episode was entitled Blood, Bullets, Body Bags, and Toe Tags, an in-depth look at the cause and manner of death, as well as crime scene investigations. You can check that episode out in our catalog of episodes of Light 'Em Up. And as education is always a key component of Light 'Em Up, we know that there are 5 separate and distinct classifications of manners of death. The first being natural, followed by accidental, suicide, homicide, and undetermined and/or pending. So there are 5 separate and distinct classifications of manners of death. On May 3rd, the city medical examiner ruled the death of Jordan Neely as a homicide, as prosecutors continued to mull over the decision whether to pursue charges. Homicide simply means the killing of one person by another. It isn't a legal determination of guilt or innocence. It doesn't mean that anyone has done anything wrong legally. Homicide is a general term and may refer to a non-criminal act as well, just as the criminal act of murder. Some homicides are considered justifiable, such as the killing of a person to prevent the commission of a serious felony or to aid a representative of law enforcement. Other homicides are said to be excusable, as when a person kills in self-defense. A criminal homicide is one that is not regarded by the applicable criminal code as justifiable or excusable. All legal systems within each state make important distinctions between different types of homicide, and punishments vary greatly according to the intent of the killer, the dangerousness of the killer's conduct, and the circumstances of the act. It's imperative that you know the laws that specifically govern your state. Jordan Neely's cause of death was compression of neck, a chokehold, and the manner constituted a homicide. The medical examiner made this determination in the afternoon of Wednesday, May 3rd. Two other men helped in pinning down Jordan Neely, securing his flailing arms. Should they be held as accomplices in his death? A woman tried to walk around the grouping of people on the floor of the subway car, but seeing Mr. Neely flail his legs, she bit her lip and stepped back, the video clearly shows. Another woman typed on her phone, looked at Mr. Neely, then glanced out of the subway doors. One man stepped into the train and told Mr. Penny, "You're going to kill him." He was not seen to physically intervene, however. About 10 other fellow New Yorkers stood by and watched Jordan Neely die. We ask, was there a duty of care owed to a foreseeable victim? Did the riders have a duty to intervene? As tragic and as sad as it is that no one moved a muscle to help stop the killing of Jordan Neely, the fact of the matter is that New York State law does not require bystanders to act when someone is in danger, but the killing on the F train has residents debating when they should step in. When New York City Mayor Eric Adams was asked, "Have you been losing sleep over the death of Jordan Neely?" the mayor responded, "Anytime I lose a person in this city, it devastates me. I take it personally when this happened. My ultimate responsibility as the mayor is to ensure that this is a safe city. And we have been successful in driving down our major crimes, driving down homicides and shootings. The death of Jordan, who also has the same name as my son, devastated me. It hurt me in many ways. As a former transit police officer, I understand how important this subway system is, and that's why we drove down crime. That's why we really put our subway safety plan in place. My heart goes out to his family. This has impacted our city. And now that the case is in the hands of the district attorney's office, justice will be served, and the defendant will have an opportunity to go to court and have this case heard in the court system." These were comments made by New York City Mayor Eric Adams. As we push forward, the legal standard is clear. No U.S. state explicitly requires civilian strangers to physically intervene when they see an adult in danger, though some impose a duty to report wrongdoing, and two, set an ambiguous standard of rendering assistance. The cumulative value or worth of such legislation has been debated for years. According to people who study the intersection of ethics, the law, and bystanderism, the phenomenon of being less likely to intervene when there are others present. New York negligence law follows the reasonable person standard, which states that a person must legally give the standard of care that a reasonably prudent person would do under similar circumstances. Duty is the first element to prove in a New York State negligence claim. We ask the question, was there a duty owed to foreseeable victims? This standard is an objective standard, which means that a person who's blind would be expected to act like a reasonably prudent person without sight. An elderly man would be expected to act like a reasonably prudent man of the same age, etc. As our time is limited and always fleeting, let's focus our attention on the charge that Daniel Penny is facing. As Penny was arraigned in Manhattan Criminal Court Friday, May 12th, on the charge of second-degree manslaughter, he's taking his first formal steps as a defendant in a case that has stunned the city and further polarized New York City. New York Penal Law Section 125.15 defines what manslaughter in the second degree consists of. If your actions result in the death of another person, even if that was not your intention, you could be charged with a serious criminal offense. Under New York law, there are different terms used to describe criminal offenses related to causing the death of another person. Murder is defined as killing someone with the intent to do so, while manslaughter is defined as causing someone's death without the intent to do so. Manslaughter cases involve recklessness, negligence, or heat of passion. Under New York Penal Law Section 125.15, you could be prosecuted for manslaughter in the second degree if, number one, you recklessly cause the death of another person, number two, you perform an abortion on a woman and the woman dies, or number three, you intentionally help someone commit suicide. According to New York Penal Law, Section 15.05, Subsection 3, acting recklessly, as used in the manslaughter in the second degree statute, is defined as being aware that your actions present a substantial risk that someone could be killed and disregarding that risk. Hey, let's provide a very brief case study as an example to further establish this point and to provide further clarification. Defendant Jose Maldonado stole a minivan. He then traveled at high speeds throughout the city, ran through red lights, and broke other traffic laws in an effort to flee from police. Ultimately, he hit and killed a pedestrian. Maldonado was initially convicted of murder in the second degree based on depraved indifference. However, his conviction was later reduced to manslaughter in the second degree. The court found that Maldonado did not have the requisite intent for a murder conviction, finding that Maldonado's actions were not intentional but reckless. The court reduced his conviction to manslaughter in the second degree. Hey, for more details on that specific case, you can visit People v. Maldonado, 2014, New York Slip Op, 4878, New York, 2014. Again, that's People v. Maldonado, 2014, NY Slip Op, 4878, New York, 2014. Hey, as we push forward, let's talk about the politicization of Jordan Neely's death. As Daniel Penny, the defendant, gets the Kyle Rittenhouse treatment, as Republican presidential candidates line up in support of the man who choked Jordan Neely to death on the New York City subway, the debate goes forward as many on the right see Penny as a hero, while others on the left see him as a murderer. The governor of the Sunshine State, Florida, Ron DeSantis, who also is one of the ever-expanding slate of Republican candidates running for the presidency of the divided states of America, said Daniel Penny should be looked at as a hero and that he was akin to the Good Samaritan in the Holy Bible. You know, the last time we familiarized ourselves with the parable of the Good Samaritan, as told by Jesus the Savior, found in the Holy Bible at Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37, the Good Samaritan didn't put his hands on anyone, nor was he the proximate cause of anyone's death through asphyxiation as he traveled on the road to Damascus. Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan, and he said that there was a man who was beaten and robbed and put by the side of the road. One man walked by that was his same race and ignored him, and he kept walking. Another came that was holy, sanctified, and full of piety, but he kept walking. Then came a man from another race who was a Samaritan, and Jesus said he stopped to help the man that was in need. And Jesus called him a good Samaritan. A good Samaritan helps those who are in trouble and in need. They don't choke people out. today, now making someone uncomfortable can get you killed. How crazy does that sound? More and more, it isn't that safe to be in public. Across the country, we are being plagued with fear. There was a time when a very wise leader who was leading through some of the most difficult times in history said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Now, a slight build, skinny Michael Jackson impersonator is dead, eulogized by Reverend Al Sharpton on Friday, the 19th of May. Jordan Neely expressed these thoughts while on the train. "I don't have food. I don't have a drink. I'm fed up. I don't mind going to jail and getting life in prison. I'm ready to die." Embracing his First Amendment, free speech protected right to express himself got him choked to death. Something is wrong here. Something is gravely wrong. The mayor of New York City and New York is on a path to a terrible future if, when someone becomes uncomfortable, they can now kill the person who's causing them discomfort. All of Jordan Neely's comments reflect back to himself. He said, "I don't have food. I don't have a drink. I'm fed up. I don't mind going to jail and getting life in prison." He never said he was going to kill anyone. He had no weapon, no gun, knife, or anything, yet he is dead. You know, I, having been a New Yorker for close to 13 years of my life, I have observed firsthand other New Yorkers being loud, driving erratically, acting erratic, being abrasive or rude in their behavior, both in the subway system and above on the surface level streets. This is the kind of behavior that is commonplace anywhere in the five boroughs, which always have been and always will be rough, rugged, and raw. I've spent most of my time in Manhattan, the Bronx, and in a small village called Elmsford in Westchester County. Hey, just listen to a few rabid Yankee fans when a Yankee or the Yankees as a team aren't playing up to their fans' expectations, and you'll know in a New York minute that New Yorkers are extraordinarily passionate and animated when they want to be. I've been flipped off for simply wanting to change lanes with my turn signal on, called every name in the book other than a child of God over a parking space on the city street, threatened with death, and on multiple occasions I've been aggressively panhandled outside of the Port Authority bus station in the Washington Heights section while I was walking to my destination on West 177th Street. I've been approached by people who didn't appear 100% well mentally, people whose body odor or smell preceded them, people who looked menacing and were mumbling to themselves, even in the confined space of a subway car. I can recall vividly being approached by a man who had two long streams of snot hanging down from his nose, mumbling something that was inarticulate and unintelligible. You name it, it's all part of the great melting pot that makes New York what it is. You name it, New York has it. But I've never felt threatened to the point to where I would put my hands on another person and or choke them out. The overarching goal has always been not to make contact with those whom I just described. As long as they kept their distance, everything would be fine. If they didn't, I would keep my distance as best I could. I wouldn't choke them out. The fact of the matter is that you can't effectively live anywhere, especially in New York of all places, and be plagued by fear. Like every player in the National Hockey League knows or learns very quickly, you have to skate with your head up. The same applies to walking in the Big Apple. You can't have your head buried in the screen of your cell phone. Your earbuds can't isolate you from hearing sounds that are around you. You have to be alert, aware at all times. A good sense of how you might protect yourself is always a wise safety plan. You have to work to maintain your personal bubble, your sphere of safety, where you actively stay out of the kill zone and off of the X, where would-be adversaries can get at you. The threat vectors in 2023 are numerous and constantly are approaching us at rapid speeds. We always preach on Light 'Em Up that the best time to prepare for an emergency is before one occurs, not during nor after. Jordan Neely should be alive today, just like George Floyd and Jalen Walker. The poem at the base of the Statue of Liberty, "The New Colossus by Emma Lazarus reads, "Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch whose flame is the imprisoned lightning and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep ancient lands your storied pomp." She cries with silent lips, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Where was that someone to lift the lamp of safety, of care and concern for their fellow man who was being strangled to death right in front of their very eyes? Where was that person? Where was that someone? Can you maintain your objectivity and say that Jordan Neely needed help, that he didn't need to be strangled, that if he was hungry as he said he was, just like when George Floyd said that he couldn't breathe, that someone could have believed what he said? That someone couldn't have walked out of the subway with Jordan to a nearby street vendor and bought him something to eat and or drink? That someone couldn't have intervened in the 15-minute ordeal and say, "Hey dude, let him go"? No, the New Yorkers on that day, in that subway car, everyone was silent, like a bunch of weak sissies, too scared to do anything but be bystanders to a man having his life squeezed out of him. Let's be clear, the people in that subway car prioritized their own discomfort and anxiety over Mr. Neely's concerns and his distress. Each of them will have to live with their apparent inaction and indifference. This was senseless, avoidable violence. Everyone needs to reflect on this and come up with an answer. Because for those on the train, it was more prudent to keep their heads down and keep scrolling through TikToks, always and only thinking of yourself. That's not the kind of New Yorker I think of when I think of New York. There are people who deem themselves to be judge, jury, and executioner, and they sit next to us on the subway or on the bus every day. That's not the kind of New Yorker I was. Be clear in this fact. We've lost something as a collective people, and I believe we will never reclaim it. Hey, I'm Phil Rizzo, and you've got Light 'Em Up.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. You want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, "I'm pretty. I'm still pretty." They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable.
You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled LGHTEMUP. All one word. That's L1GHTEMUP. All one word.